This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
And there it is, everybody. A medley. Wow. From beginning to end. We took you from the very beginnings to where we're at now in chronological order.
That was quite the compilation, guys.
Dean Rowland, everybody. How are you, Dean?
Doing well. How are we? How are you guys doing?
Doing amazing. Well. Amazing. Yeah. It is an honor to have you.
Excited Dean, to chat with you.
Yeah, Dean, before this interview, Dean Baldwin, that is. There's two Deans here, so I got to clear this up. Dean, you were saying to me about just when I was playing that compilation earlier, what was going through your mind?
Well, yeah, the thing for me with Collective Soul, even going all the way back to the early 90s, as you guys were first really breaking out into the mainstream, your sound to me has always transcended subgenres and even trends where other bands feel like they've had to adjust their sound in order to stay relevant with trends. Collective Soul is always, it's kind of like you carved your own lane. And over 30 years, there's an element that's been consistent, but still fresh. Now, the thing that I've always been fascinated about, not to spend much time dwelling in the past, but I think back to 93, 95. So we're in the thick of grunge. And at the time for me, a lot of the grunge music was very angst, very dark in terms of lyrics and sound. Collective Soul, very positive. There's always been something very uplifting in your music. And in fact, I'll go as far as say what I was telling Don was, I actually think World I Know was either the second or the third song that my daughter ever heard when she was born, right behind Radiohead's High and Dry. So every time I hear that song, I think of my daughter's birth. But in looking at the time era, did you know how unique your sound was going to be? Was there any type of pushback from the labels at the time saying, no, this is too different than where the industry is at?
We never had any pushback from the labels, and we kind of started when we did start independently, and we released that what became the first album, Hence Allegations, and it was a mix of demos, like some of it like that Ed had done on his own, some were like band recordings. It was really a compilation of songs trying to get a record deal or get a publishing deal. And it just so happened that Shine was picked up by a couple of commercial radio stations, and it just started organically getting traction. So we never intended for that record to be what it was. And in saying that, like, it wasn't like we were a band that was signed and a record label came in and found us for a particular sound. So they kind of gave us the freedom and the liberty to go just produce our own records and do what we did. And we've never consciously tried to be anything other than just what, you know, we made music that we felt good about, you know, like just melodic, you know, kind of rock riff bass sometimes, but sometimes it's, you know, there's strings and piano. We just kind of went with it, you know, we took in the variety of influences that we grew up on.
Mid-90s, it was like this Collective Soul was the sound that everybody needed at the time. It was, wow, fresh.
Yeah, I mean, and I kind of look back on it. We would get criticized because of the time, the era, we coming off the height of grunge, and we never, obviously, were not really a part of that world at all. I mean, I enjoyed it. I love it. But we never saw ourselves as that, but that criticism just kind of went through us because we knew that was not what we were doing.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to point out, Dean Rowland, is going through that medley is you guys have never really, you've always stayed true to the core of your sound. You've never like gone out, but hey, we're going to go do this electronic album today, this week. You've always stayed true to who you are. I mean, you heard it throughout the medley of how, and then there's so many things like I'm all about goosebump moments in music. And like in the song Hurricane has that where, oh my God, there's that little moment in Hurricane. I just get these goosebumps, and you've always been able to deliver those too. So, was that always something like you, when you were writing or coming up with music, you just, that was the core sound that you loved and you just stayed around that atmosphere, right? You never wanted to do anything crazy.
Yeah, because we've never, our approach is we make music that we like, not with the intention. I mean, hopefully people love it and it connects, you know, but we're not making that, we're not making it for other people first and foremost. I mean, it, you know, it's, it works, you know, in conjunction at some point. And we're not afraid to go in there and use the studio. We grew up in studios, so, you know, try new sounds and new approaches. But I think we have stayed true to ourselves. I mean, our philosophy really has always been about serve the song, you know, like,
yeah,
follow that initial spark and see what comes from that. And we still try to adhere to that, even today, 30 years into it.
Absolutely. Is there an example? And first off, I changed my name to Bubba to make it easier. So for this session, everybody can call me Bubba.
I'm from the South. I can.
That way there's just one Dean. But is there an example of a song when you talk about serving the song? Is there an example of one where you or the band tried really hard, you weren't feeling it in the beginning, and you tried everything you could to make it go somewhere else, but the song kept demanding, "Nah, it's going to come out this way." And just
went with it. Well, you kind of. Hopefully learn early. There's probably some songs that never made it because we couldn't find them. They probably sat on the studio cutting floor. You learn pretty early on. A song like December, for instance, off the Blue record.
Yeah.
That song kind of developed itself. I mean, Ed brought it in, and it's a, you know, just on acoustic, it's the same four chords over and over again. It repeats the entire way through. So then you have to allow that to be the canvas, like this wide open array of like, what are you going to do with this arrangement to make it interesting for yourself? So that's where on that record, we put in strings and we reversed them. And so there's like these backward sounding strings, and that sounded interesting to us. And that led to the ending where we put in a new vocal melody and bring in the old, and it's like all of these, there's like four different things going on at the end of the song. So that's one of those that to me is an example of you have to just follow the trail of the spark to serve the song. Sometimes, you know, it could be a song like Heavy, where it's a guitar riff that started as a bass and drum groove, and then just put the guitar part on top, and it just felt like it naturally was just a riff, you know, heavier type rock song.
That's awesome.
And, again, not to dwell on the past, but I do want to talk about Here to Eternity, but on World I Know, were you aware at the time just how iconic that song was going to be the moment that it was recorded?
No, I think we felt that it was a pretty powerful song. I mean, sometimes you can really feel it. I mean, you can't tell if it's going to connect and be a hit, or I mean, that's virtually impossible. But certain songs will affect you personally. You're talking about like the goosebumps moments or whatever. And sometimes it happens to us too. Like you get it, you know, in the studio or with World, we were playing that song, and a lot of that Blue record we had recorded after we'd been playing it on the road for a year. We were playing most of those songs live before we recorded them. So we would find on off days, we would find studios and record whatever song we felt best about. So like we recorded in Memphis, Chicago, Reno, Miami. So that record was recorded in a lot of different places kind of as we went along, because we wanted to get out a band record that we felt, you know, was a represented who we were, you know, at that time, instead of that, like I said, the first record was more of a demo and didn't really represent who we had become.
Well, and now here we are with Here to Eternity, the 12th studio release. You saw that medley I did. That was every track. So that was 11 tracks. Then you heard Mother's Love, which is track one on the new release. 20 songs on this.
Yeah.
On this deal. That's pretty, talk about heavy. You've gone 20 tracks on this thing.
Yeah.
You almost double album. It's a double album, basically.
It is a double album, yeah. So, yeah, we didn't go into it intending to do a double album. We had talked about it over the years, but we recorded the record at Elvis Presley's estate in Palm Springs.
Oh, wow.
And we had the house. We had the house for like, I don't know, like 6 weeks or so. And once we got in there, we found that momentum, and we we just were grooving. We'd come off the road too, so we were pretty, you know, tight, and we've been playing together. The chemistry in the band is great, so we just started rolling with it, and it kind of morphed into 20 songs. And we recorded a few Elvis songs, and yeah, we made the most of our time there for sure.
Wow, did you feel the spirits in that place?
Yeah, I did.
I bet.
It was cool. It really was. He's the only one that's ever recorded. He recorded two gospel albums there in the living room of his house. And that's where we set up and we recorded right there.
Wow.
It was pretty cool.
That's incredible.
That's very cool.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to mention too, you know, siblings in bands, sometimes they don't last. Case in point, like Oasis.
Literally. Right?
Right. Like Oasis, for example. They're already showing their throats all the time. You've been with Ed this entire time and you're still as tight as ever. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. I think your mom's happy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mom's happy about it. She's probably one of the main reasons we're still together. We still have to sit down at the dinner table every so often and, you know, behave. But no, it's you know, it's like any relationship, man. In, you know, 30 years into it, there's been some ups and downs, some time that, you know, it's like, all right, let's go sit in our corners for a little bit. But it never got too bad. Thankfully, you know, I think it's a testament to just even with Will growing up with him, like he known him my entire life, and you know, Edna obviously. Being brothers, like that rich history roots you in just keeping one another humble and accountable to not being too much of a dipshit.
Yeah, I've heard stories of bands where like there's tours where every member's in their own bus. The only time they ever even see each other is on stage, and then they get away from each other. Never anything that bad, huh?
No, it never got that bad. Yeah, we've had a few, you know, a few kind of moments where it was like, all right, let's just I'm gonna move to California and you're gonna live in Atlanta. Let's take it from that.
You know, Don, something you didn't make me think of because you're talking about the brother connection there, and it made me realize, because you could take the songs off of Here From Eternity and I think you could put them on the Blue Album and they fit, and vice versa, you could take songs off the Blue Album, put them on Here to Eternity, talking about that continuity of sound. And AC/DC is another example of a band I could say that about. And again, you got brothers in there. So I don't know, maybe brothers are the secret sauce to just having a very good, solid, consistent
Malcolm and sound. Angus, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's that. I mean, it's probably several things. And one obvious is Ed's vocals are, to me, they're some of the most unique out there. I mean,
oh yeah.
Love him or hate him. I mean, he definitely has his own style and is a, you know, it's a, even like, cause we've done like our own side projects over the years. I have my band called Magnets and Ghosts and we've made three albums, and Ed's had, you know, a couple of solo ventures he's done, and it's like, he'll do it like one was like this very Americana type thing. And it was really great. And they did a thing for a couple of records, and it's like, I was listening to it, I'm like, damn, it sounds like a Collective Soul, but there's like a banjo in it, and that type, you know, his voice is just it's just so its own unique thing, which I love that. I think it's great.
Well, it's like when Eddie Vedder did that Americana venture too. It's the same thing, right? You hear Eddie's voice, but you're like, but the music's different, you know?
Right.
To your point, Dean, Ed's vocals are very distinct. Is he very loyal to, or very dedicated to like one specific mic? I'd spent time years with a singer that had to be this one Sennheiser mic.
He's bounced around. I don't know what he's into now, to be honest. He's bounced around different ones over the years, but he's pretty, I know he's selective. So he's just, but I don't know what he's using right now.
It blew my mind. It's a different subject, but I'd always been curious what Karen Carpenter used in the studio, because she has, you know, that very distinct voice.
I don't think
I'd read that.
That's the most, probably, she's my favorite female voice.
I'd read a post or an article written by Richard who said that she used an SM58, and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. That was just a Shure SM58, your basic workhorse of a mic. Did a beautiful job.
I mean, Petty sang into that. I mean, that's a lot of dudes. I mean, sometimes it's like you just got it. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Go for a certain, you know, style, but.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you said that she's like your favorite female vocalist. You know that song, Yesterday Once More? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times I could listen to that, and it still affects me, that song.
Because, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's all about the power of music is that song. And when you love music, that just hits you. And, you know, again, with Here to Eternity, you know, I mentioned Mother's Love is the first track, and I played it at the end there. Mm-hmm. I know that albums, 99.9% of the time, a band puts an album in order for a reason. Why was Mother's Love the track one on Here to Eternity? Did it set the tone for the rest of the record, which we haven't heard?
I think the record's kind of it's pretty diverse all over. I mean, it ranges, like there's the Bob Dylan track, that acoustic live version. I mean, there's a range of stuff on there, but we have a history of, it always feels good to put a little rock jam on there in the beginning. Sets the tone, like you said, and then just go from there.
Yeah.
Right. There's a track on here now. We haven't heard this record, and we're looking forward to it. When is the release date? Did it say here?
May 17th.
May 17th, just a couple weeks away, everybody. Get ready. Yeah. There's a song on here, Sister and Mary.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like that could be some spiritual type song.
No.
I just thought maybe you were going down that lane there for a minute, because the Sister and Mary, it had a kind of thing in it. But
yeah, if it was really Sister Mary, I think that would be more. That song's actually kind of interesting. It's about, Ed wrote it as a, from like a character, fictional characters. Partly fictional characters, but it's like it's more of a, just a piano based little oblah dee oblah da type thing, like a Beatles.
That's why I see track 13 said la dee da, and I almost felt Beatles when I saw that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to this. And you're going on the road with Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah.
That Darius, man, that's fun. And Edwin McCain, who Dean's been chatting with a lot lately.
Yeah. We've been good buddies with those. We were label mates back in the 90s. We were all in Atlantic Records together. And we've been good friends for many years. You know, obviously, like you said, Darius went and did his country thing and had great success with that. And the Hootie Boys, they do a Hootie Fest every year. I don't know when they started it, but we played it last year. And they said they were going to do a tour, and it just organically, it was like, you know, what do y'all think about hopping on it? I'm sure. Let's do it. So it's always exciting. Fun to tour, like do these kind of tours with people that you like, and you spend a lot of time, you know, in the same vicinity. So it helps when it's, you have good compadres to do it with.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, everybody, you can go catch up on the tour dates on the band's site, CollectiveSoul.com. I will just highlight that it starts in Dallas, Texas.
Yes.
On May 30th at the Dos Equis Pavilion.
Oh, yeah.
I could have some Dos Equis right now. It's delicious.
Do it.
Another thing is, you're going to be, another one I want to highlight is Hershey Park, because that's fun, that place.
Yeah.
Shoot the factory there. You're going to be
there. Yeah.
And then you're going to be in our neck of the woods. So Dean's near in North Carolina. You're going to be in Raleigh on September 13th, or Raleigh, I should say. And then in Charlotte on the 19th. Is it Raleigh or Raleigh?
It's Raleigh.
It's Raleigh, yeah. Sorry. And then Charlotte on the 19th, and then where I am in Tampa, September 26th. So we will individually be out to see you.
Yeah.
All right. Bring it.
So thank you, Dean, for taking time out of your life to talk to us, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Nice chat with you fellas. I like that conversation, man. That was well done.
Thank you so much. Well, that shows how much we love your music. I mean,
it really was cool.
Thank you so much, Dean. Have a good night, man.
Okay, man. You guys take care. All right,
thank you. Bye-bye.